From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. What were you doing as a teenager? I was watching a lot of TV, failing algebra, and learning how to drive. But Alex Pryor, the next music director for the Eugene Symphony, was already a professional musician at 14 and an assistant conductor at age 17. You might say that Pryor was a child prodigy, and even now, after being a successful conductor all over the world, he still exudes youthful energy as an adult in his early 30s. Today on the show, you'll meet this newest member of the Eugene arts and culture scene and hear how he plans to take an already renowned symphony to the next level. Like other institutions in Eugene, the symphony punches above its weight and Pryor is excited to begin the next chapter. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Heading into its 60th season, the Eugene Symphony is a real gem for the community. Today on the show, you'll hear from its newest music director as well as the executive director and hear how their collaborative efforts hope to make beautiful music into the future. Alex Pryor, the new music director for the Eugene Symphony, and also joining us in studio is Dave Moss, the executive director of the Eugene Symphony. Welcome, gentlemen, to both of you, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Alex, I'm going to start with you. Why don't you just tell the audience about yourself and your career and your music journey?
Oh, well, I've been doing this for quite a while. By the time I was 10, I kind of was an equal parts composer and singer. I had quite a career as a singer as a kid, and if you Google my name and boy singer, there's some very funny videos of me singing to Meryl Streep and people like that, and I had an interesting life and in that way, and I fell in love with being on the stage too in that way, and learned about working with singers, and you know, I would say I'm in equal parts a symphonic and operatic conductor, and the experience of singing helped me learn about breathing and helping singers. Anyway, I was living in London, but I had a composition teacher in Moscow who I would go and see sort of 4 or 5 times a year. A certain Boris Tchaikovsky, unrelated. I tell you Boris, it's Alexander. Sorry, his uncle was Boris, who's a very good composer. Alexander Tchaikovsky, unrelated to the famous Tchaikovsky, but related to his uncle, who's really a wonderful composer, Boris Tchaikovsky. And he ended up being appointed to be the rector, the director effectively of the St. Petersburg Conservatory. And the way I met him was a composition competition, which was a blind. You just send in your score. It was a piano concerto competition, and I, of sort of international standing, and I won it. And he taught me a little bit, and he became the rector of the conservatory. And he said, you know, like, your concerto that you submitted for the competition is better than most of our PhD students, you know.
Wow.
So why don't you come study here?
And how old were you at the time?
I was 12, I guess.
Wow.
And he said, you know, Alex, you're a really, really talented composer, but your music is going to make you no money because, you know, I don't write kind of filmy music. I write pretty, let's say, art music. And he said, you ought to take conducting because I think you'd be a good conductor and you can make a living that way. And so it was sort of an afterthought that way, although I also had an experience where a different piano concerto of mine, before that one actually, had won another opportunity to be recorded, and the conductor turned up drunk, completely drunk. A very nice guy, good conductor, but he was off his head, and he sort of suggested I conduct it, and I didn't really know what I was doing, but I managed to get through it, and it gave me the taste. So when Tchaikovsky said, "Oh, you ought to take conducting," I was like, "Yeah, that's a great idea," and I had the most incredible professor assigned to me, kind of by Tchaikovsky's choice at the time, but looking back, I would always choose him, Alexander Alexeyev, and he had an incredible technique. You know, he studied in Vienna with Swarovski and all, same time as Mehta. So he was kind of Mehta's classmate. And so it's beautiful, traditional technique, very classical conducting education. And there's lots of things you need to know beyond the classical education, but it's good to have that foundation first. And so between composition and conducting, I had a great education there. And when I was 17, I applied for the assistant conductor job in Seattle. And to my great, I would say surprise even, I was invited to audition, and so I flew to Seattle. I had no idea what to expect. I think I'd only been to the US once before, to New York, when I was, I don't know, really, really wee kiddo. And I had this image in my head that Seattle would be like like Vladivostok, like this, like, you know, because it's across the. I look at the map and I had this idea there'd be all these like Soviet blocks, and it sure wasn't. And I remember feeling very sort of excited by all the glass, and it was very exotic to me. And I really fell in love with the nature of the place too, like the landscape. And I won the job. They had two assistant conductors that year. I was assistant conductor to guest conductors. There's something quite Schrutish about that title, because Maestro Schwartz had someone he wanted, and I got to assist the guest conductors, which frankly was great because I got to work with more different, you know, a larger number of conductors, as well as the phenomenal orchestra that is the Seattle Symphony, and they really are fantastic, and they treated me so well, and I learned so much, and that was kind of my first professional step, and from there, after that position, I guest conducted a great deal, and then when I was 22, I was appointed chief conductor of the Edmonton Symphony in Canada. I'd been guesting there for a few years. My very first piece I did there as a guest conductor was Duke Ellington's Harlem, which we will be doing next season as a little spoiler. So wow. That's a fun little. But that was kind of the piece that sparked off my relationship with Edmonton. So that's kind of a nice little connection. And that was my sort of I'd say transformative position. And. And then between then and now, I've done a lot of work in Germany and elsewhere, and here I am.
Yeah.
That's the short version.
Me. And let me reintroduce you to the audience, Alex Fryer, who is the new director, the music director for the Eugene Symphony. You're obviously very young, and you got into this very young. Do you think that, you know, being so young, that's going to be a great gateway to attract even more younger patrons of the symphony?
That's a great question. I mean, I appreciate the compliment. I'd say in spite of my twinkish looks, I'm not as young as I seem at 32. And there's a very good number of excellent conductors, quite a bit younger than me, working right now. And I'm really pleased about that because for several reasons. I mean, I very much was very young for a long time. I made my professional debut at 14. So I don't know who else did that, to be honest. And when I was in Edmonton, I was the youngest leader of a North American orchestra ever, of a major one. Now I'm not. I'm still young, but not in the same extreme way. And that's good. And it's good for several reasons. First of all, and above all, means I've learned a few things. And, you know, I look back at my time in Edmonton, and there's a lot of lessons I learned there about what I won't do here. There's also things I will do. But, you know, there's no teacher like time. You know, in terms of music making, nothing can teach a conductor as well as being on the podium and making music with the musicians. And in terms of leadership, you've kind of got to do it. Do you know? You follow your instincts, but you also, turns out, some of them are not absolutely honed to the correct spot, and so you learn. And I've had the chance to learn a lot over the years, and I'm grateful for that experience. And I plan to apply all the lessons I can. Also, you know, as you sort of alluded to, and it was a common question when I was really, really young. You know, you're standing in front of a group of people, you know, whose average age might be 40 or so, maybe older, and that depends on the orchestra. And you know, you better have something to say. Now, I don't think it really matters. It's helpful not to be the youngest ever in some ways, but basically you just need to make sure you've done your homework. You better know the score, you know, inside and out. However, you know, I don't know if my relative youth is useful for attracting young audiences. I'm not so sure that young people need someone their own age to be attracted to something. I think they need something that is relevant to their lives, you know? There have been plenty of older conductors who've been fantastic at attracting younger audiences. And I think the way you attract any audience that perhaps isn't, you know, your core audience, although I'd like to point out that the concert I did in Eugene had a great deal of young people, and I think that's one of the many great successes of this really, really treasure of an organization. But, you know, in a sort of abstract general way, the way you attract an audience, whether it's a whatever the demographic is that isn't a frequent, you know, frequent sight in the audience, is I think you have to listen. You have to ask and listen. You know, you don't tell people what they need that don't live the life that you've experienced. You ask them, you communicate with them, there's a degree of serious degree of humility necessary, because, you know, we exist to serve. We're not some edifice that people ought to admire. We're there for the people. And so I can't know what someone who hasn't, you know, whose life I haven't had a significant experience with, what they need. But I sure can ask and then try and do my very best to respond. And I think that's very much Dave's approach, actually, as I've been, you know, learning about his leadership, and it's been really great to hear that and to learn from that too. And I think that's the right way. So I think you attract young people by serving their needs, by being relevant to their lives. The good news is that great art is relevant to everyone's life. So, you know, you make that case to a degree. And what you never do is talk down or patronize or instruct people as to what they need, because no one likes that and no one needs that. And that's definitely not our purpose, nor our desire. Yeah.
Dave, I'm going to transition to you. Why don't you talk about what, you know, what you all saw in Alex that said, this is the guy, this is the person to bring in?
What a great question. And to think that this entire process has taken more than 2 years at this point, and that Alex was the very first candidate that we saw of our five. His concert was way back in October at this point. You know, I was looking back at some of the, you know, we had a lot of audience feedback from these performances. We generally see about 1,500 plus at our performances, and we'd see between 300 and 400 survey responses, all critiquing and giving their thoughts on each of the candidates. And I was looking back at Alex's yesterday, and we had so many comments talking about how high the bar had been set with this first candidate, and just the energy and the inspiration and his ability to connect with an audience, both on and off the podium, and just the sheer excitement that he brought to the performance was, you know, for me, I think very important. That being said, it was the committee's decision, the committee of 13 that was made up of our board of directors, our many musicians on the committee, and some community members who ultimately made the unanimous decision to share this with the board and to hire. But I will say personally, and this is recorded, so he can use this against me, I'm rarely impressed by conductors. And I remember sitting in the very first rehearsal watching him conduct Dvorak, and I went, oh my gosh, I'm quite impressed with what he is physically doing on the podium and hearing the orchestra in a way that, granted, I've only been here a year, I had never heard the orchestra play that way before. I said, this is something special. And so it's with great admiration, actually, that Alex is the new music director of the Eugene Symphony.
Yeah. Well, continuing with you, I, you know, you and I have talked before, and I asked you at the time sort of the collaboration between what you do and what Alex is going to do. Talk about that, because it's I think it's fascinating as an organization that has this product or the leader of this product, and how important that all kind of plays together.
I appreciate that you use the word product in this, not necessarily about Alex, yeah. But the music is a product, yeah. And we have something that we have to solve a problem in selling what we do to an audience, and there has to be demand for that. So, you know, with this partnership, I will say that about 2 hours after the board had unanimously voted to hire Alex, I got on the phone with Alex and I said, here's what we had planned for next season, which we had talked about while he was in town. And I don't know, over the next 2 hours or so, we completely revamped next season. And we did it in a way that was very much artistically what Alex was wanting to share with his community and what he, as an artist, feels are his strengths. And as we talked through it, we talked about what the audience was looking for, what we've heard in the feedback. And this collaborative nature of what we need to market a season, what artistically the output should look like, and then how we build something that's not just sustainable, but something that can really grow here in this community. That's what this collaboration between executive and music director is for a successful organization. And I couldn't be more delighted to have a partner with Alex in this for the Eugene Symphony. And, you know, the other part of that triangle is our musicians. We have incredible musicians here in Eugene. And I'm just excited to, if that was one concert last October, I'm looking forward to seeing Alex on the podium 8, 9, 10 weeks next year to be able to continue to elevate that and to really be in the community and listen.
Yeah. Alex, I'm going to go to you. You know, what attracted you about the job and about the community, as well as we just talked about, the musicians that you're going to lead?
Well, that's a great question. A great deal is the short answer. I was aware of the Eugene Symphony even as a kid in the UK. And, you know, that I think that speaks for itself. Like, this orchestra really has a reputation that goes way beyond the local community. Wonderfully, though, it serves the local community. It is an orchestra with renown. And I think that's something for Eugene to be proud of, actually, that in a wonderful, wonderful city, but small, you have an orchestra that kind of is this great ambassador around the world, and that's reflected in the quality of the playing, very, very, very much so, and of the organization as a whole. So I was attracted to the fact that I knew this was a terrific orchestra, and before I applied, I spoke to a number of colleagues who had conducted, guest conducted, soloed, and had other experiences with the orchestra, heard, in the case of a few friends in Portland, the orchestra, and I said, you know, does the reputation reflect the reality? And the answer was an overwhelming yes. So I was like, okay, well, that's good. And then, of course, there's the fact that this orchestra has a very storied history with conductors, and, you know, it is an honor to join the ranks of you know, Miguel Huth Bedoya and Marin Alsop and Giancarlo Guerrero and people like that, really everyone who's conducted here. So that's always exciting. And maybe above all, though, first of all, I wanted to lead an American orchestra again, or a North American orchestra at least, because there are things you can do as a music director of a North American orchestra that you can't do in Europe. In Europe, you have very... you have different, really special things that also are attractive, and traditions and so on and so forth. But a North American orchestra is much more focused than in Europe on community service, on connecting, on being kind of this focal point of a community. And I love that. I love how music can bring people together, and actively doing that. But also, you know, the Pacific Northwest, since I became assistant in Seattle when I was 17, and was my first North American city, has always kind of been one of my places I feel at home. A very important sort of sentimentally, emotionally place for me. And I was very excited by the opportunity of being able to, I mean, maybe give back is too grand a term, but to share the music I love and the effects, the positive, meaningful effects of the music I love with a part of the world that means, you know, a very, very great deal to me. You know, and then that plus Eugene being just an awesome place to kind of be based, it really is both just on a quality of life level, which, you know, as I get older, I care more about, I have to say, and also on an artistic level. It's a place that's kind of just fully, fully immersed and drenched and saturated with a very creative spirit in a very diverse set of ways, you know, and I find that very attractive and very inspiring. And as a composer also, it's really fun to be in a place like that and to have that spark your imagination. So all of those elements combined, plus the quality of the orchestra, and later on, I didn't really know this at the time I was applying, but I got more and more certain, was the ethos of the orchestra. Like, all these things I'm talking about and care about were also important to Dave and to the whole team. And it was a team, and it really matters as a music director. You see a team that you're going to be rowing in the same direction, that you're going to be kind of the sum of your parts will be greater than the individual parts, you know. And I thought, wow, this is a team I really want to work with, and that will do great things, and with a great instrument that is this orchestra. And it kind of, it's like, who wouldn't want to apply? It's like a dream job.
Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to the new music director for the Eugene Symphony, Alex Pryor. We're also talking to Dave Moss, who's the executive director. Dave, I'm going to kind of finish with you. So you and the committee, you got your guy. Where do you think, with this new director and with what you've already assembled, being fairly new yourself, where can you collectively take the Eugene Symphony?
That's a wonderful question, and something just in the last few days we've discussed quite a bit. And I think that the 60th anniversary season that we will announce on Thursday this week, on March 20th, we'll announce the full 60th anniversary season. I think that's a good demonstration of what the future will look like for the Eugene Symphony. The programming is just out of this world. We've been able to make some changes to move some of our Thursday performances to Sunday matinees. It's good for families. It's good for folks who might not drive after dark. And then the type of programs that Alex has put together for those performances, Romeo and Juliet on a Sunday afternoon in March, And in October, we have Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, the elder Tchaikovsky.
The elder Tchaikovsky.
Yeah. West Side Story Overture, a concerto by Vivian Fung, a violin concerto. And then all of the programs in our new blockbuster series. So the Music of Journey, the Dolly Parton show we're doing. You know, Elf, the holiday Christmas movie with the live orchestra. A Saturday matinee performance of film music with no screen, but, you know, music of Hans Zimmer and John Williams and Strauss. And to have Alex on the podium for that says a lot about where we want to meet this community, that we're developing programs that are you can truly find something for everyone here in this season. And that same week, and I just, you know, talking about the future, we talk about youth and education. We're going to be doing the very first side-by-side with the Eugene Springfield Youth Symphony. On a Sunday matinee, we're going to have a performance with, be an orchestra of about 140, 150. All of the young students in the Youth Symphony will sit next to one of our professional musicians, and Alex will be on the podium. And it's those types of looking to the next 60 years of the organization that is embodied in next season. And I think that the best years are ahead of us, and that's saying something for the Eugene Symphony, because we've had an incredible past, and we owe it to a debt of gratitude, not just to those on the podium, but to the supporters in this community who make this a reality, that we have this. We shouldn't have this in Eugene, but we do, and it's because of a lot of hard work and a lot of generosity that the Eugene Symphony exists.
Very exciting, very exciting. Alex, welcome to town, and congratulations. He is the new music director for the Eugene Symphony, Alex Breyer. And Dave, it's always great to see you. Dave Mossy, Executive Director of the Symphony. Thanks to you both for coming in and chatting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. One of the more upsetting kinds of crime happening in the community is dubbed a smash and grab. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with a local reporter who's been following this trend and a local business owner who suffered through such a crime recently. There's both frustration at the crime spree, but also empathy for those living in desperation. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.